Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Good to see you once again.
Thank you.
And another rousing series of estate planning.
Oh, yes.
Particularly as it has to do with, well, what I traditionally thought of about estate planning is what happens when I die as far as my estate goes. We know as Christians, we've plan to be with the Lord.
Absolutely.
Absent from the body, present with the Lord. But what happens to all the stuff? And,
yeah.
Our home and everything. We want to talk about that this time.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're coming off of a couple different series that we talked about specific gifts. We talked about how to help churches or family members or specific individuals. And what happens if we have unique assets, such as businesses or antiques and things of this nature. So there's a couple different series that we're moving out of. And of course, you can find all of those past podcasts at legacyandfaith.com. And I wanted to then move into this independent series, which is fine. We talked about all the things and specifically some unique items, but what really happens now that we have something in place, or maybe we don't have something in place. So what happens with my stuff? What happens with these unique assets? And what does it look like in as far as transferring to family members or to business partners or whatever your circumstance may be? So what if you own businesses? What if you own real estate? What if it's more simple and you have the home and the investment account or the IRA? So what if you don't have children? And so all these different options that we have when we see clients, and no life is exactly the same, right?
Yeah.
We're uniquely created. And that's one of my things, which is I don't like templated documents because I'm not my neighbor. My neighbor is not me. So how does the same exact document ever accomplish the same exact goals and the same exact thing? And we have different assets, different children, different visions, different goals. So my philosophy, that one document cannot be the same thing. So now let's take a look at, well, we talked about all these unique assets. We've been talking about unique situations. Well, now what happens if I actually pass away? What happens to all the different documents and how do they work together or how do they work separately? And so, yeah, that's going to be kind of the premise
of
it.
Okay, well, then what specific documents are you talking about? There's many that we've talked about in past shows, but let's kind of round those up again.
Yeah, so, and I'm using the plural very strategically. So there's different types of planning that we can do. We can create an estate plan with a will package. We can create an estate plan with a trust, a revocable living trust package. So in simplicity, those are the two document choices.
Mm-hmm.
Now, while a will is only a death document, so it turns on when someone dies, and its job is to make sure that anything that was not jointly owned or did not have a transfer on death option or beneficiary designation, also known, that will step in and say, okay, what happens to everything that was not specifically jointly owned or designated versus a trust can also be a living document. That's why it's called a revocable living trust. It's intended to be a document that you utilize during your lifetime to make sure that you're protected, your assets are used during your lifetime. But then it also steps in when you die. And so it also holds instructions on this is what's to happen. So ultimately, the will and the trust have instructions for when someone passes away. Then also, there's a thing that you may have called a business. And if you have a business, you might have either a bylaws or member agreements, depending on whether you're a corporation or whether you're an LLC. So there might be a business document that is also in the background, and that may and typically will give instructions on how the business is supposed to be managed. Now, and then finally, we have assets. And as previously just mentioned, they may have a transfer on death component. So assets can also have a death component, even though we don't think of assets having a death component. We think that they're there to use. A bank account is so I can write checks, pay my bills, and have a place where I can go get my money. But yet it is also, when structured with a transfer on death or a beneficiary designation, then it also becomes a death contract. So that's because you have a contract. So anytime you go into a bank, an investment account, if you sign up for a 401k at work, all of these things have a contract that you actually sign to open up an account. And in those contracts, there is language about this is what the company will do with your account should you die. Mm. So actually, most financial institutions are also in the death business, even though you would never really think of your assets as transferring or as a death instrument. But yet, that is one of the major components of individuals' estate plans, is that they use transfer on death designations, they use beneficiary designations. It is actually the most common estate plan out there. Mm. And yet we don't even think about that being a death issue when we sign up for a financial account. And yet it very much is. And so there's multiple different documents that are going to need to be looked at that will have control. And some of these trump one over the other. They are superior in language and in how we look at the estate and actually close an estate. Mm. And so we have to look at all of these different documents when someone dies, whether it's a will, whether it is a trust, whether someone has nothing, has no estate plan at all, which, of course, I would never want.
But that is a plan.
You're right.
In fact, that's half the population's plan.
Yeah, you're exactly 50%. Correct. Yeah, and because it is a plan, because if you don't make a plan, then Washington State's law has said, what is the order of who gets what? So if you don't make a plan, then Washington State has made a plan for you. And I think I haven't looked at every state statute. But I would imagine that every other state has done exactly the same thing, which is, and this is called dying intestate, without a plan, without using your voice. And so if you don't have a plan, Washington State has a plan. No, Washington State doesn't take everything, but they do create the plan of how money and assets will flow, specifically if you did not use either joint ownership or beneficiary transfers. And most people, such as owning a home, they don't put a beneficiary on a home. And if you have a spouse that has already passed away, or if you're single at the time that you die, then what happens to the house? No, then that's going towards probate is what is the answer. Mm. And so therefore, how do we know what to do with the funds after we sell the property? Well, we look to the will, we look at the trust, or if none of it, we look to Washington State law as a default. Mm. So yes, you're correct. No plan is a plan. I don't think it's a very good plan at all. Right. I would much rather someone use their voice and take a step to actually communicate to family members, this is what I want. So therefore, yes, all of these are plans, and we have to look when someone passes away. This is everything that we have to look at globally to determine exactly what we have to do and the steps we have to take.
Okay, well then what does it look like when everything is not properly integrated into each other, whether it's a will, trust, what kind of potholes are we looking at there?
Yeah. So it is very, very important. As a matter of fact, with most estate plans, this is the disconnect, is that you can create a will, but then if you don't go back and look at every single asset and how the beneficiaries are managed, then there may be a disconnect between the asset and the plan itself. There's many individuals who have created a revocable living trust, but yet they don't have their bank accounts in the name of the trust, or they don't have their IRAs properly coming to the trust. They may not even have investments, homes. What do we do with vehicles? So we can look at all these different things, life insurance policies. So we can look at all these different assets. And if they are disconnected, then we have to go through a priority pecking order to determine what happens to that asset. And sometimes, maybe out of sheer luck, the beneficiary designation is actually matching what the plan is. But oftentimes, and I'm trying to use my words very carefully. I'm not trying to exaggerate in what I have seen. So I would say a majority of the time, what I see when people walk into the office is that their assets are saying one thing, but their intent and desire is something very different. So therefore, if you have a will, well, number one, is it up to date? Is it more current? Because we change our opinion. We change relationships. How many times I have seen a client come in and I say, how old are your kids? Oh, they're 30 years old. Oh, so I guess we don't need the provision that they're going to be taken care of by your brother anymore in the will. So in other words, the will was created when the kids were young and yet nothing was ever changed.
But that doesn't invalidate the will, does it?
Doesn't invalidate it. It just means that it's really old. Okay. So now we have language in here that is saying one thing, but yet we need to now start ignoring it. We need to start overriding it to accomplish the real purpose. But what if you hadn't changed your beneficiary designation? So you leave it to spouses, you pass away within close proximity of time to each other. Are there any other beneficiaries on that plan? So if we look at what is actually written in the will, and then we go asset by asset to look at what's happening with each asset, there is oftentimes a disconnect between the desire of what has been created versus what the asset is saying. I've mentioned this on multiple different shows over the past years, which is I've seen ex-spouses on life insurance policies. Because you forget that you have one at work, for example. I got divorced and I went and I forgot that I have this policy that my employer gives me if I should die. And so when you were married, you filled out your first employment information and everything goes to your spouse. But now you're divorced, your spouse is deceased, you've changed jobs, and so much changes in our life that keeping up with assets is actually one of the more critical components of an estate plan actually fulfilling and working as your current desires are. So first of all, having a good plan that is updated because things change is step one. But step two is that we need to have these assets aligned with each other and aligned with the plan in order to really fulfill the vision that you just wrote down, whether it's in a will, whether it's in a trust. They have, all assets must play nicely with the original plan, with the main document.
Okay, what happens with your estate plan when you die? Looking at all of the ramifications of that event that we're all going to experience sometime in our life. And taxes, death and taxes.
Yep, that's right. They're inevitable,
and
aren't
those
they?
Those can be planned for with help from Paul Grant. How do people find out about your services, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's previous podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, and it's all found at legacyandfaith.com.
And back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. We have an upcoming seminar, and it's going to be held at Anthony's Homeport in Kirkland. This is for well-qualified clients, and if you have an estate that is worth $3 million or more, then we would love for you to come and personally enjoy the evening and the information. We're going to be discussing wills, trusts, what does it mean to have a good estate plan, and what you need in it. So come and join me at Anthony's Homeport in Kirkland. It is going to be on Tuesday, October 28th, starting at 6 p.m. Come join me for a live workshop at Anthony's Homeport. You can register for this event at legacyandfaith.com or by calling our law firm at 425-939-9948. Again, we would love to see you for this live event on Tuesday, October 28th. Go to legacyandfaith.com to register.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, looking at what happens when we die, do our estate planning efforts work and or don't work, as the case may be? And you're talking about how things, when they're not aligned, some of the outcomes of that. What else happens when those documents aren't working properly, Paul?
Yeah, and I going into break where I was talking about that your assets have to reflect the plan. And unfortunately, what I see is that even with some newer plans, they're just signed and we got the paperwork, but we never went back and looked at each individual asset to ensure that it's going to play nicely with the plan. So what does that mean? Well, have multiple clients that have special needs children. And so, for example, if you have named all of your children, including the child that is going to need governmental support for the rest of their life as a beneficiary on an asset. Mm. But in the will or in the trust, we've created a special needs trust, which the objective is to ensure that any money inherited by that individual that needs support for the rest of their life, that money can be used for that specific purpose without interrupting the governmental assistance. Okay. Mm. So, but if we've listed that individual on the asset as a beneficiary, then that individual, by law, at the moment of death, is an inheritor, and it never got to the proper instructions within the document. Mm. So it became their legal possession. I'm in the middle of a case right now where that is the case. A client, not mine, so the individual passed away. Their documents were created probably 20 plus, almost 30 years ago. Mm. And so some of the questions I've been getting is, well, we had a discussion and this is what they would want. Okay, but that's not what the document says. So right. So one of the things about old documents, like I've said, is that we change our mind. Mm. We change how we envision things moving and flowing. What if you have some ministries set up? You left a gift to a church, but now you've changed churches. Well, the intent may have been to have that gift go to any church I'm going to, but we named a specific church or a specific ministry that maybe you no longer agree with and how they're managing their ministry. So these things need to be updated. Or grandchildren entered in and you would like to give something to grandchildren, but you've expressed it verbally, but you never expressed it in the document. Mm. So now we have an old document and it's going to someone who needs governmental assistance. Well, that's a whole pickle. And so we have to unwind that pickle and it's really tough. So what if we then disinherit that child and we're just going to trust the other siblings, if there are other siblings in the family, to take care of that child? Well, that promotes and actually has negative consequences to the potential eligibility of the special needs individual. So disinheriting, hoping and expecting that the family is just going to step in, great, but what if the family goes through a divorce later? And I mean, one of the individuals, what if the responsible child that you left more to ends up in a divorce? What if they die prematurely before the one that they're supposed to take care of and their plan doesn't accommodate for the care of their sibling? Mm. What if they have health issues and can't, and they're just needing to concentrate on themselves? So just to rely upon a person, again, there's potential pitfalls to not having a plan that works properly. And then if we use beneficiary designations and we need to get money back to the will, but we never list the will as a beneficiary so that it can get to the work, or we never retitle an asset in the name of the trust, then that special needs trust that we took time, energy, and money to create may never see a penny because the asset never agreed and was never brought into proper alignment with the plan itself. So there's many potential pitfalls when we just create a plan or we have an outdated plan and the assets are not properly aligned. It is one of the most critical and important aspects of any estate plan. Number one, get a good plan. And if you have a plan, get it reviewed. Understand what the strengths and what the potential changes may have taken place in the world of the law and taxes to ensure that that is going to...
Reviewing these plans every, what, three to five years?
Absolutely. Yes, definitely. And so if your plan is more than 3 to 5 years old, then you're behind the eight ball already. I make so many different adjustments based upon new laws that continually come out that I have no control over. So therefore, whether it's tax, whether it's legal, whether it's Washington State updating a certain section of their law, whether it's Congress updating a tax law that the IRS now implements, all these things have a dramatic effect upon exactly an estate plan. So make sure your estate plan is ready. I have repeatedly said, I know it's kind of an older joke if you've listened to me a couple times, which is, well, if your estate plan is outdated, just get to me 30 days before you die. And right. So that's all you got to do. But now I'm busy, so now I need to move that to 60 days. And why? Because the philosophy is that things are outdated and we got to have the document at its highest best use. I don't want to pass away handcuffing my wife or my girls with an old document that didn't do what it was supposed to do or meet the most current situation or challenge because I just don't know what the future holds. I think that I have a plan and a trajectory. But I don't know. I have no guarantee of being able to fulfill that. So therefore, the plan itself has to be at its highest best use. And then step two is that every asset must be integrated with the plan. Anytime you do a new plan, assets must be looked at. Beneficiaries must be looked at. Why? Because a contract with the bank, with your investment firm, with the 401k company, with a life insurance policy, all of these are based upon contract law. And a contract will take precedence. It will lead the way on what is supposed to happen. So if you have a special needs beneficiary, as an example, if you have a child that has been disconnected from the family and you wanted to change, if you have a child that is not good with finances or having health issues in the middle of a divorce, and I could name life situations that go on and on and on because we live in a fallen world. I don't want those things to happen to my girls, but hoping isn't good enough. I want a strategic plan to ensure that when it's my turn to see my Heavenly Father, that I have left with the greatest ability that I can, that with my last act of stewardship, that I pass that on to my family in a way that ensures it's going to meet the challenge. So we have to have good documents. Then I need to look at each asset. So if a contract is going to be kind of the absolute way that assets are going to move, if that is different than my will or my trust, I've got a problem. So in other words, my will plays secondarily to a contract. Therefore, if I have old beneficiaries in my bank accounts, in my investment accounts, life insurance policies, that contract is actually going to win of who gets what and typically outright and in their hands. So be careful of listing minor beneficiaries when you have children, if you have crossing life insurance policies with business owners. All these different things are going to be ruled by the contract from the investment company, banks, investment companies, financial portfolios.
Overrule the will of the trust.
Overrules the will. And so therefore, and will also overrule the trust. That's right. Yeah. Because it's a contract that you didn't change. Mm. Aligning your assets is the second most important thing that must be done. Mm. Number one, create a plan. Get it updated. Get it reviewed. Number two, you need to look at every single asset to make sure that they are aligned with the plan. That will create a successful estate plan.
What happens when we die? Are our estate plan and our reality matching? And how to make sure that we can die with that plan working properly? Paul Grant is an estate planner and tax attorney, and he would like to help you with your plan. How do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. You can find past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, and ways to communicate with us, and it's all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, more on this subject next time on the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.